Welcome to Career Tools. Bad Career Advice, CEO Edition. Here we go. This podcast answers these questions. Why shouldn't I take advice from CEOs? What's wrong with CEO advice? And if CEOs are so successful, why wouldn't their career advice be good? Folks, if you're a manager and you're listening to Career Tools, your career is important to you, and that's good. Our effort to help you with the next phase of your career is the IM Conference. We're bringing in 10 speakers from the Manager Tools community, all of whom know our work. Seven of them are CEOs. The rest are senior executives and all kinds of companies across the spectrum, designed to help you start thinking about the next phase of your career. How are various geopolitical or corporate or executive or other trends going to affect you? How are you going to start learning to think about the outside world, competition, customers, all the various things that affect the entire organization, which is the purview of the executive? Come see us at the IM Conference. The genesis of this podcast is that Wendy and I read a series of articles in the Wall Street Journal with guidance for students who are joining the workforce and just giving them career advice. And on the surface, it makes a lot of sense to ask successful people what they think their future new hires should know. And one of the articles was about CEOs giving advice. Hey, here's what I've learned in my career. Here's what I would do if I had to do it all over. Unfortunately, while it's kind of sexy to read about what very successful people have done, there's a real problem with taking advice from the kinds of CEOs who were interviewed, and frankly, in many cases, CEOs in general. So here's what you need to know. Wendy?
When we read the article, there were four pieces that we picked out particularly, which we thought were good advice on the surface, but difficult to apply early in your career and possibly led people in the wrong direction if they followed it verbatim, you know, without really thinking about who that person was and where they were at that time. So the four we picked were: pick your bosses wisely, go for the job with the best role models, job hop, you'll be better for it, and realize the power in saying no.
Yeah, I actually, when I read them, I was, I just got the general sense, well, first of all, who can argue with these things? Sure, you know, all things being equal, sure, pick, you know, get a good boss and all these kind of things. They're all reasonable. And I thought that's kind of the way a lot of career advice is. People extrapolate from one particular instance in their career and they don't necessarily resonate with everybody all the time in all cases. So let's go through each one of them. Pick your bosses wisely. On the surface, it's hard to argue with, right?
Absolutely. And like you said, all other things being equal, a job with a boss that you can get on with and that you like and that you feel is supportive of you and so on is a good thing. But all other things are never equal, and that's part of the problem. So this advice came from Barbara Corcoran, who's well known for being on the Shark Tank TV program. And she said that graduates should pay attention to the person interviewing them, the person that will be their boss, and they should ask themselves if they like that person as a potential boss. And her logic was that every time she had a great boss, she had excelled, and every time she didn't have a great boss, it made her a worse employee, it made her experience worse, and she didn't do as well overall. One of the things she said was, look for a manager who won't be threatened by you, which is a very psychological thing to be able to get from somebody in an interview, and look for someone who will be able to push you. And her secret, or her not secret way of doing that, was to take what your intuition says in the interview.
Just trust yourself. You'll know. I do think there is a kernel of truth here. I just think that it doesn't rise to the level of an entire section of an article in the Wall Street Journal that millions of young people will read or pass around or share about career advice. It's not a fulcrum point career advice kind of thing. I could talk about that for hours. I do think that the idea of a boss who would push you ahead, not be threatened by you, somebody you could like, is a good thing. I have no problem having somebody saying, you know, it was close and I made the call this way. I think that's good. I also think that there are a lot of young people who don't consider this at all. And so I do think it should be in the mix. But I don't think that we want people spending a lot of time thinking about it during the interview. I think it's for later. It's for reflection after the fact. And as poorly as so many people interview today, and folks, I'm not picking on young people. We interview more senior people who interview poorly as well. They're not prepared and they're not focused and they're not targeted and on and on and on and on. You know, if you're going into interviews, I would say, if you're spending your time thinking about whether or not you like the boss, you won't be very good at the actual interview. And this is a case where someone at her level has probably forgotten how hard she worked to get ready for her interviews. And she might have had so many options that it gave her the chance to say, well, I have all of these now, which one should I pick? And too many people are put in a situation where, unfortunately, even in today's market, it is June 2019 and it's one of the best hiring markets, if not the best hiring market we've ever seen. People still are not coming away with multiple opportunities. And if you're not in a market this good, that's a function of lack of preparation, lack of being ready, lack of doing the hard work in advance. And if you only have one offer, it doesn't matter about picking the best boss who will push you forward and not be threatened by you.
And how many things could you think about in an interview anyway, right? You're listening to the question, you're finding the right example, you're trying to give a cohesive answer that where you follow your own thread and don't get confused about what you were saying, and you're trying to use all the words that you think the hiring manager wants to hear. And on top of that, you're trying to think about whether or not you like this person who may only be asking you questions. And there's not a lot you can get from somebody asking you a one sentence question.
Yeah, here's another way of looking at it. Go into the interview, be prepared, do your homework, and then afterwards, think about it a little bit. And rather than just saying to you, trust your intuition, and don't get us wrong, guys, we like Ms. Corcoran. We admire her. Rather than saying, okay, do I like the person or not? Ask yourself some different questions. Were they on time? Were they prepared? Were they polite? When they interrupted, did they interrupt in a pleasant way? Were they rude? Were they brusque? Did they smile? Were they distracted? Did they help you to your next interview? Did they ask you how your day was? These are all things that, in many cases, you could almost do a black-white, on-off switch kind of thing. The manager who comes in late is distracted, is not prepared, takes a phone call, doesn't look you in the eye, doesn't take a lot of notes, asks weird questions. Don't go to work for them. If I had a chance to talk to Ms. Corcoran, I would say, what about this? They say, yeah, that's what I meant. And then you also have to look on the other half, because most managers will fall somewhere in the middle. And you also want to look on the other half for the ones who are truly great. Now, you might tell yourself, well, you know, they were just putting on an act in an interview. Well, A, so are you. And yet you really are very unlikely in a reasonably effective interview for a professional as opposed to a minimum wage or hourly laborer. It's unlikely that in an hour or 45 minutes that you're going to just not know and they're not going to know and nobody's going to have any sense of anything. You have to trust yourself. You have to trust yourself about them. I think that's what Ms. Corcoran meant. And they're going to trust themselves about you because after an hour, you're going to know something, but you're not going to know everything. So maybe it's more just of a black-white kind of thing here. Maybe what she should have said, and I feel bad about this because she'd probably say, no, that's not what I meant. I have to do that all the time to people. Maybe what she just said is don't go to work for a boss who won't do these things. And here are the things he or she might do in the interview that would do that. I would say, though, Wendy, though, that most candidates probably do for the reasons I mentioned and more, do a poor job of evaluating the kind of person they'd like to work for.
Right. Especially when you're working, it's your first job or your second job, you don't know what kind of person you need to work for. And often I've found in my own experience that the bosses that I worked best for, I wouldn't have been able to tell you ahead of time what it was about that person that was going to be make it a good experience for me and for them.
Yeah. In my case, I will say I didn't choose based on my boss because in the case of Procter & Gamble, I didn't know who my boss would be. I actually didn't interview with my boss. I interviewed with a recruiter and my boss's boss, and then I was slotted into a position. But more importantly, the way I addressed the boss was, all things being equal, the chances of me having a really lousy boss at Procter & Gamble are pretty small. In other words, I allowed the reputation and the culture of the company to, it caused me, that reputation and of the company caused me to be able to infer something about the likelihood of my boss. Again, pretty big range. There are, I'm sure, bad managers at Procter & Gamble, but there are less bad managers at Procter & Gamble per capita than there are at XYZ Corp, all things being equal, which, of course, they never are.
Never are, right? So if you go into an interview, the truism of the way you do one thing is the way you do everything is as true for interview hiring managers as it is for anybody else. If they, like you said, are late, are unprepared, haven't read your resume, all that kind of stuff, that's how they live their life. And that's probably not a good sign for a great manager. So if you really feel that the manager you've just interviewed with and that person is going to be your boss is not a fit, then don't take that job. Rather than her thing was look for someone great, we're saying, look for the bad signs and don't go to work there.
Avoid failure rather than seek the pinnacle of success when it comes to this.
Exactly. And there's a whole bunch of other things that you might choose a job based on, like the salary and the job itself, what you're going to be doing and the potential for growth and the potential for the industry and, you know, the commute and all sorts of things. So your boss isn't the only thing that you're going to be considering. And that's what makes the whole all other things being equal so difficult, because they're not.
Yeah. Sometimes it could be sensible to work for somebody you don't like because you get some experience or some skills, whatever. I also did that in my career because my wife said she wanted to live in a certain place and there were limited opportunities for me. So there are a lot of factors that go into this. How well you get along with your boss should be only one of them. And a little bit more nuanced probably than Ms. Corcoran recommended. And if I meet her and she finds out about this podcast, I'll say, you know, I apologize. We've been doing this for a long time, ma'am. And I just think that it was very possible that a lot of people whom you wanted to hear your advice, they probably wouldn't have understood it as easily as you talked about it. So we're just trying to help.
And of course, to be fair to her, she had two paragraphs in which a journalist quoted her, which is never a good sign for what someone actually said or actually meant.
We have a couple of friends who are journalists, and I admire them, respect them, and I'm happy to help when they call asking for a quote. But I still find it shocking that, at least in the United States, you can be interviewed, not say something, and have what you did not say verbatim be put in quotation marks. I don't know. So she may not have exactly said that. And to be fair, journalists are not great business people necessarily. The whole structure of editing and writing and so on, they really don't have managers exactly the same way, and they don't understand large corporations unless they're a very serious business journalist. So.
Okay, so we'll go to the next one, which is kind of similar. It's go for the job with the best role models. And this one came from Clara Shi, who's the CEO and founder of Hearsay Systems, and she's also a board director at Starbucks. And what she was saying was, don't look at the pay or don't think about the pay, but look for role models. So it kind of echoes what Barbara Corcoran was saying. But Clara was saying that a good manager can set a frame of reference for everything from a strong work ethic to how best to collaborate with others. And that's true. And we also say, just looking at the salary, I just named a whole bunch of other factors. The salary is only one factor. And looking only at the salary is not a good way to assess whether or not a job is a good one to take. So again, we're not disagreeing with how we just want to refine it a little.
Yeah. Both she and Ms. Corcoran have said things that are fairly anodyne. Nobody could really argue with them, but the devil is in the details. What we found disagreeable with this one is she advised that the way you discover this information about looking for role models is to ask the interviewer about their management style during the interview. I mean, I'm just stunned. What questions do you have? Well, tell me about your management style.
Apart from the fact that most managers can't describe their management style anyway.
Actually, it's not just that they can't. I mean, they can't. Many managers haven't thought through and abstracted it out enough to describe it. But they also don't. They tell you all of the things that it's like a sports star being interviewed. Hey, you had a great game out there. Hey, just trying to help my team win. You know, that was a really interesting at bat. You know, just looking for something good to hit. I mean, there are 50 phrases that you can just say over and over again. Well, what's your management style? Well, we set really high but achievable goals, and we work together as a team. We collaborate. We really believe in communicating, and I try to give everybody an opportunity to do better, and we talk about what your long-term career plans are, and I do my best to fit in there, and my door's always open.
And you've learned absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing, yeah. And if you ask this question, I mean, it seems to me there are two places you could ask the question, somewhere in the middle of the interview or at the end. Chances are highly likely you're going to ask at the very end. I can't imagine 15 minutes or 20 minutes into an interview that you would ask that. Well, actually, I can ask it. And in fact, there's a really bad career advice person on the web who recommends turning the tables on interviewees and say, hey, what questions do you have of me? Which is ludicrous. We've tested it. It's a really bad idea. But if you were to ask this at the end and the person has 2 or 3 minutes, it's like asking somebody, tell me your whole life story. You have 30 seconds. Yeah, the interviews are not a two-way street, guys. It's not a conversation between equals. Yes, whether or not the company offers you is their decision, but your decision about whether or not to go to work there if you get an offer is equally important. It is, because there are two sides to the equation. However, they don't happen at the same time. You're both learning about each other at the same time, but your questions happen later. We never recommend you ask questions like, what's your management style, during the interview. I would never ask that until after I had an offer, because it's a waste of time. It doesn't matter what the person's management style is if you don't get an offer. And if you ask this question and they tell you about themselves for 5 minutes, that's 5 minutes you can't ask a question that will help them see how well prepared you are and that you're thinking about their business and how you can contribute.
Right. Because if 5 minutes of an hour is a high percentage.
Yeah, I just think it's misleading. The vibe today in career advice about, oh, it's a two-way street, it's wrong. It's misleading. And you may not understand that if you're a fairly new recent college graduate, or you're just starting your professional life, because you're reading this on the internet that it's a two-way street, because it's not. And you'll know it when you become a manager and you say, wait a minute, I've got to decide whether or not to spend $50,000 or $100,000 on this person, and they think they get to ask me 50% of the questions in the interview. We'll get to that. I'll let you ask me 1,000 questions if you want. I'll fly you back in here and you can go through the entire interview day, and it can be you who ask questions of us. I'm solid that we're a good opportunity for you. I would have never brought you in here if that's not the case. But the idea that the interviewee gets to ask questions as well throughout the interview is as if it's a 50-50 proposition. You may not know it, but you'll know it when you become a manager that it's ludicrous.
Yeah, and then you'll cringe at all the things you did, right?
Yeah.
It's more like a teeter-totter, a seesaw, where one person is all the way up and one person is all the way down, right? During the interview, the employer has, or the hiring manager has, all the power, right? They have everything, because there's nothing you can do to make them give you the offer, all you can do is answer their questions in a way that hopefully persuades them to give you an offer. And then once you have the offer, then you have everything, because there's nothing they can do to make you take the offer. It's all about them persuading you to take the offer. And so if you see it that way, then it makes no sense to ask a question that isn't about persuading them to give you an offer. So you think that asking something about me, there's something about my management style that will change whether or not I give you an offer. And that doesn't make any sense, right? Right. And after you have the offer, you have all the power. You can, like you said, you can ask any question you like because you have it. And it's all about them persuading you to take that offer. Whilst her advice kind of makes sense, it doesn't make sense that she's asking or she's telling you to ask that during the interview, because it's not the right time. You don't have the power and it's not the right time to ask.
As a general rule, folks, I tell you, when I read this article, Wendy and I were talking about it becoming a podcast, I actually tweeted about this. And I think I said something like, when successful people share their career advice, if they're saying anything other than work hard and be nice, don't listen. That's the answer. I don't think any of these people, they're CEOs, they're very, very successful people. I think if you got down to the brass tacks of it, they would all say the same thing. Not what's something interesting you've learned from your career search, which in fact, all of these things I think they learned and I think they're interesting, but the nub of it is work hard.
Results and relationships, right?
Yeah, results and relationships. And hey, folks, I don't mean long hours, although if you want to be a CEO, long hours are very likely in your future, but that trumps everything else. And I think if it's a bit like sitting in a meeting and avoiding the 900-pound gorilla in the center of the room about work hard. Oh, let's talk about the color of the chairs we're sitting in.
Hey guys, guess what? We're creating an online portal for Roadmap. Starting in July, you can enter your roadmap data online. No more apps, no more tiny keyboard, no more I don't have room on my phone for another app. Just you, your desktop, and Roadmap. A whole new relationship to make your life better. Get Roadmap as part of a personal license or as part of an on-site EMC.
Okay, next one. Job hop. You'll be better for it. This one really ticked me off.
Yeah, this is from Steve Hafner, who is the CEO of Kayak. And what he said was that jumping from company to company isn't a bad thing these days, and that it will help you grow. And we just disagree with this, flat out disagree. He's implying that changing jobs gives you different and better experience, and that's the only way to progress, and that there's no negatives associated with it. And he's wrong.
Yeah, he's wrong. I mean, it's not wrong for him to say that about his inferences drawn from your career if you've moved around, but the vast majority of people would look at a career with a lot of job hopping and immediately think negative. Maybe not hardcore negative, but negative.
And it's not true that the only way to progress is to change companies, right? My dad worked for the same company for his entire life, but he had like 50 different jobs during that time because he looked for other opportunities and other opportunities came his way and it looked like it was interesting and it would help him grow. And so he went and did something else. To an outsider, it looks like he did one thing for his whole life, but he didn't, or his whole working life, but he didn't. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of the conversations now about job hopping and saying, oh, it's okay. And these people did something wrong. They didn't do something wrong. They did exactly the same thing. They just didn't change companies.
Yeah. I think what happened here is that in this case, probably the way it was presented, I'm guessing, is that they're responding to the historical career advice, which is, you know, stay with one company, you know, build reputation. The company will stick by you in bad times and so on. And he's basically pointing out the seminal change in careers in the last 30 or 40 years that you don't do that anymore. My father retired after 45 years with the same company. Maybe it was 44. And that's a lot less likely than it used to be. The world is different. And it would then be normal to say, you can job hop more than you used to. And that's actually true. You can. But the idea to recommend it as a career strategy, first of all, probably, if you're as smart as Mr. Hafner, you probably could and you'd be fine and you'd manage your career and that's great. Most people can't do that. We actually have a podcast about the downturn, economic downturn, rite of passage, that if you job hop from 5 to 6 or 7 companies over the course of 15 years or 20 years, and somebody like me sees your resume and notices that every time the market gets a little tight in your industry or in your company, you move, I'm not going to hire you. I don't want to spend 5 years or 3 years or 4 years building up a reputation with you, a relationship with you, understanding you, fitting you into the team, adjusting jobs as people's careers or as people's skills change and people go through different life events and moving responsibilities around to give me more and more flexibility to serve my customers, and then have you leave when the going gets tough. Now, you could say, hey, it's my career. And you're absolutely right. And it's your choice. You can do that. But it's also my job. So I wouldn't hire you. And they'd say, well, you're missing out. I'm great. I said, you're probably right until things got bad. And you know what I need greatness? When things go bad.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's really easy to be good when things are good, right? It's easy to be a great salesperson when the market is good and everybody is buying stuff without even thinking about it. It's much harder to be a great salesperson when the market isn't good. And if you've never done it, then you've never proved that you're actually good and you're not just relying on the market.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the majority of hiring managers who see that would say, you know, if you've moved every 18 months to 2 years, can you really have learned everything you can? Or are you just skimming off the top? Do you have an ability to develop and maintain relationships over the long haul? Because that's what companies want, is long-term relationships with their customers, with their vendors, with their employees, among each other. You know, what kind of loyalty will you have? You know, and again, what will you leave if things get tough? That's the big thing. So can you change jobs more frequently than your parents? Absolutely. Is HR in one company going to manage your career? No, you're managing your career. Can you move every 2 years over the course of 15 years? Will it be not a problem? No, you can't. It will be a problem. Maybe you're only going to apply to places where it won't be a problem. The problem is a lot of places won't interview you for this reason. Okay, last one. Realize the power in saying no.
This is my favorite.
I assume you mean by that that this is the one you like the least. That it's just...
Yes, it's the one that's the most outrageous.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So the advice comes from the CEO of Clif Bar, who make those nutritional bar things that you have for snacks. And the article says, in the year 2000, Clif, the company, turned down a sale. They were going to sell the company to Quaker Oats for $120 million. And instead they chose not to go through with that sale, but to stay private. And so the idea is that there were two founders of the company and they would have got $60 million each, and they turned that down. But the idea of saying no to the sale of your very successful company, right? They were making $40 million a year in revenue at the time, I think, and selling that to a worldwide conglomerate, like Quaker Oats is part of Pepsi, so it's like one of the biggest companies in the world. How is that a useful model for someone who's deciding to take a job or take an activity or a task who's just started their career? Like, it's so different.
Yeah, it almost sounds like it's a Zen test. What might you realize about the power of saying no? Saying no to a job because not selling a company worked out for this guy is ridiculous. It's not apples and oranges. I mean, it's apples and a Barbie doll. You know, look, would you want to say no to a boss who rewards your hard work with more responsibility? I don't think so. Although I did talk to a kid once say, why is it that when I work hard and do well, I get more responsibility? I said, well, that question bothers me. I thought that's what you wanted. No. I don't want more responsibility.
That's like putting your foot on the accelerator and wondering why you're going faster.
It's the equivalent of market share. Your market share just went up. You know, if your boss asks you to interview a new team member, potentially to come to work for you, don't say no. Your boss is showing you he values your input. Don't say no to opportunities. Now, look, I totally get that they decided to keep their company and probably they're worth even more and they're even more successful. If you think about it only in terms of net worth, and they're probably enjoying their roles, and that's good. I'm glad for them. That's the beauty of economic capitalism and property rights and so on. It's their choice what to do. And that's a bit like the road less traveled, right? You're trying to decide which way to go. Probably whatever they would have done, things would have turned out okay. But I think most everybody knows that they get to decide what they do. And saying no or saying yes, I would say that while there is power in saying no, there's a heck of a lot more power in the world in saying yes. Not to selling your company for $100 million. That's a much more complicated thing that I wouldn't say flip a coin over yes or no. Really bad career advice.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me that would be included in this article aimed at graduates. So all of the people that were quoted are super successful, right? And they have made great decisions for them, obviously, because otherwise they wouldn't be super successful. But they're a long way from graduating. That, you know, most of them are 40 years from their graduating self. And even their kids have graduated and done, you know, have been in the workforce for a while.
Yeah, and all of them have been in unconventional roles.
But two.
Yeah, and so one of the things that happens is when you're interviewing people, things that are unusual or interesting or different are the ones that stand out. But when it comes to career advice, that means it would tend to apply less. What's newsworthy may not be good advice, so to speak, which is too bad because this was an article about career advice.
It's a shame.
Yeah, so let's be careful out there, folks. Okay, that's it. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.